Well, good day and welcome to another episode here of the Disaster Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and we are going to be bringing you an early episode this week with everything going on in the tropics in the Gulf of Mexico. And we'll get into our update on Marco and Laura here in just a little bit. But of course, we've got to bring in Sam Bradley. Sam, hey, how you doing? We've got everybody here, the whole team back for a quick update here on what's going on.
Yeah, and I love the fact that this team can come together on a moment's notice because we just put this out to them this morning. And even Dr. Joe, who was just reaching his destination, and we'll tell you what that is in a minute. So we got Kyle, we got Becky, and we got Laura. So who wants to start telling us about Laura and how she won the hurricane lottery against Marco, and what's going to happen? That's a loaded question, I know. You can share. Kyle, you want to start?
Sure. Thanks so much, Sam. Great to be back on the podcast here for this special update. As Sam hinted at, and Jamie, with Hurricane Laura now progressing steadily towards the shores in the Gulf. Tropical Storm Marco, as you mentioned, his winds actually decreased just before making landfall on Monday evening near the mouth of the Mississippi River, with only sustained winds of about 40 miles an hour. However, wind is only just part of the story when it comes to these tropical systems, and Marco actually brought some heavy rainfall and gusty winds from Louisiana all the way through to the Florida Panhandle, with some rainfall totals near Apalachicola in Florida measuring as high as 11.8 inches there just due to that storm alone. And now pivoting to Laura, which per the 1700 or 5 p.m. local time, Eastern time update here on Tuesday, August 25th, Laura is forecast to continue to strengthen as she moves north across the central Gulf of Mexico into the northwest Gulf of Mexico on Wednesday, approaching the upper Texas and southwest Louisiana coast on Wednesday night, and then moving inland late Wednesday into Thursday morning.
Well, Kyle, I think you and I are the only ones that aren't going to get wet out of this team. Becky, you want to tell us a little about the storm surge issue, which seems to be a big one?
Yeah, so Kyle gave a great synopsis of kind of the timing and kind of general impacts of Laura with this storm. And I think one of the bigger concerns, particularly for where it's making landfall in Texas, a lot of people in kind of the Houston area and areas a bit eastward are always concerned about the heavy rainfall threat that can come with these storms. The biggest threat with Laura is going to be the storm surge. And I think what's interesting, and not a particularly good way, is that because that coastline from basically Houston all the way over to sort of, I mean, kind of most of Louisiana is very, very flat. So when you get this storm surge and this you know, tons of water being pushed inward inland, it could actually travel a good distance inland. So we could see storm surge as far as 30 miles inland. The immediate coast, I think we're anticipating about a 10 to 15 foot storm surge on the high end, and at the very least, 1 to 3 feet of storm surge. Wind gusts. Surge is definitely significant with this. There have been mandatory evacuations for much of the coastal region. I think close to 500,000 people now are under mandatory evacuations, particularly in the cities of Beaumont, Galveston, and Port Arthur, as well as some parts of southwestern Louisiana. So people are definitely taking this seriously. They are evacuating. I've seen some videos of evacuations occurring. Water is definitely the biggest threat with this, not to diminish the wind threat. Probably gusts right at landfall in that small radius of hurricane force winds of anywhere from 100 to 130, depending on the strength, is one of those scenarios where it's in the Gulf and is going to undergo rapid intensification. The question is, how intense does this get? Right now, we're anticipating a Category 3 at landfall. The good news about this storm versus a storm like Harvey is that Laura is going to be very quick moving. So it's going to make landfall late Wednesday, even like early Thursday, probably somewhere in the midnight timeframe of Wednesday into Thursday. And by Thursday morning, it's actually over where Dr. Joe would have been in Memphis. And by Saturday, it's going to be impacting Jamie and I in the mid-Atlantic region.
Like I said, Kyle, you and I are the only ones that are going to be dry out of this storm. We hope, but who knows? You know, things could change. Yeah, I hear, Kyle, that this is kind of a big wind event. Is this unusual in any way? I mean, all hurricanes have wind.
You're absolutely right, Sam. All hurricanes do indeed have wind, and that's the wind is what those measured wind speeds when those NOAA Hurricane Hunter aircraft and those Air Force reconnaissance aircraft fly through the storms, and by measuring them with the probes on the aircraft or through the drop sons, so little instrument packages, they drop out of the bottom of the aircraft and they fall down to the ocean. They're measuring the wind speeds in that storm. And that's what we use to classify these and rate them using the Saffir-Simpson scale, right? Category 1 being the weakest, Category 5 being the highest. But that only tells just part of the story. And as Becky hinted at and did a good job of describing, rainfall is not going to be nearly as significant for those in the Houston area as with Harvey, which actually made landfall 3 years ago to the day today, believe it or not. Wow. As we're talking about this. But those hurricane force winds at landfall here for Laura are projected to extend about 45 miles out from the center of the storm. But those onshore winds, if they do occur on or near high tide, along with the swell and the waves, on top of that, you're expecting a storm surge to travel very, very far inland in those saturated soils, those bayous, and those bay areas along the Texas and Louisiana coasts.
Yes, we remember. Joe and I were both in Houston after that storm. But one more question, then I want to jump to Joe. Becky, isn't it unusual for this cone to go that far north and then east? I mean, I've never seen it actually go that far inland and over. What's up with that?
No, I wouldn't say that's too unusual. A lot of that has to do with the speed of the storm. And the storm is going to be moving fairly quickly. Once the storm makes landfall, it generally then gets caught up in whatever the flow is over that land. In this case, it's going to get caught up by a trough moving through the Great Lakes. And that's going to sort of combine. It's going to produce a lot of rain over the mid-Atlantic. So if the forecast is known that far out, which in this case is today's Tuesday, that's only through Saturday, it's only 5 days. So that's actually pretty normal. It's just not as common that you see that cone over land. I think we're much more used to seeing it over water, you know, before a storm makes landfall. But in this case, that's pretty typical of the low itself. And by this point, Laura will be classified either a tropical depression or a post-tropical cyclone. In other words, just your average area of low pressure, you know, moving across land. So not too unusual, just probably not something we've thought about too often because we're so used to seeing it over water.
Jamie, any questions on this so far?
No, I think you're doing a good job. And I just think, you know, it's you know, I think that's notable. This is, if I'm correct, Becky, this is the first major hurricane or predicted major hurricane for the season. Is that correct?
Yes, I believe so. We've had a handful of Category 1s. Hannah, Faye, I think. I can't even keep track, to be honest. It's all kind of a blur. But this is definitely the first major of the season to make landfall.
And we have a whole lot more season left.
unfortunately, yes.
So Dr. Joe just got to Baton Rouge while his home, in fact, his whole state is going to be in the cone while he's there in Baton Rouge. But Joe, what are you going to do when you're there?
Well, we've got, hi, everybody, first of all, from Baton Rouge. We are in place here in support of both Louisiana and Texas. There are several task forces, mostly with search and rescue capability for the water that are in the area as well. And we'll be coordinating with Louisiana and Texas resources for any needs that they may have. We are hopeful that this the main area of impact is going to be fairly rural and therefore not a whole lot for us to do. But nevertheless, we're getting here tonight and be ready to go by tomorrow.
Well, it's good, though, because one never knows. The only thing certain about these storms is uncertainty. So given, you know, we think back to Katrina and wow, that was a lot of search and rescue in the water. So it could be quite similar to that. So that's what you guys do best, certainly. Jamie, you have a question?
Yeah, Joe, just to remind folks that are listening, because we know we have a lot of new listeners that are coming on all the time, talk a little bit about how the your team got activated and what exactly you do in support, because you are working, you know, based upon what state and local needs are, and that can change at any time.
Sure. So, you know, the role of FEMA here is in support of local, regional, and state assets. So we get activated at a request of state government up through the governor to FEMA, and we require an activation order from the president to put us in the field. And then once in the area, the incident support team is in charge of the liaison work with the states for whatever needs they may have, and then coordinating that with what the capabilities are of our teams that are in the area to be able to perform whatever tasks needed to be done. In many cases, we have capabilities that may be beyond particularly local resources, just because we do a lot of heavy rescue, collapse structure, et cetera. And we're staffed to be able to move anywhere in the country and make that level of response. So, you know, part of what we'll be doing over the next couple of days is coordinating with those local resources, helping with needs assessment once the storm has come ashore, and figuring out areas that are in need, and then applying whatever resources are needed and requested into those areas to affect rescues or evacuations or whatever else may be necessary.
So, Joe, I assume correctly that you're with the team rather than the IST this time?
No, actually, I am with the IST this time. The team is traveling fairly light with mostly water-based assets, so it is a rather skinny down team. We don't need a lot of additional resources like collapse structure rescue and all that sort of stuff for a mainly water-based event. So in order to make our footprint a little smaller and make us a bit more agile, the team is whittled down a little bit. And they are close by, but I am not directly over that team today. I'm actually working with the IST and all the teams that are in the field.
Well, it's good that you have an opportunity to sit down with the locals and kind of work out a contingency plan. Kyle, you have a question.
Yeah, for Joe, what is your role specifically with the incident support team for this deployment? Because I know you fill several roles on the Tennessee Task Force One team, but what are you doing with the incident support team this go around?
So my primary function here is still the medical component, of course, and so I help to I'm here to take care of all the members of the IST. I'm also here to support the task forces that are in the field because they are fairly light teams. There's not a lot of medical resources associated with them, and so I am available to help those teams out as well. So I may float around from team to team as the need may arise. I'm here to, although we don't have many canine elements in the field, I'm here to take care of any dogs that we have working as well. And then part of this role includes coordination and management of doing all this sort of stuff in a COVID environment, ensuring that we're protecting ourselves and the folks we interact with adequately, and being able to ensure that we're taking care of any patients that we actually rescue.
Yeah, a lot to be said there. Jamie, question?
Yeah, I noticed that there's also some predictions for inland flooding or inland flash flood warnings and advisories for farther inland in Louisiana, Arkansas, even into parts of Tennessee and Kentucky. Does the IST have the flexibility to shift gears when something might be moving farther inland as the requests come in, Joe? And for Kyle or Becky, how serious are those risks? Are these just kind of advisories that are saying keep a heads up, or is this something that could cause major flooding event because it's going to be raining in the Mississippi Valley essentially?
So from the IST's perspective, we will move as the need moves. We essentially get in place prior to the storm's arrival so that we have assets on the ground immediately. And then we shift geographically in whatever direction the storm goes in, or particularly the damage cone, we move along with that. So certainly in the past have chased storms for many hundreds of miles across several states in keeping up with the need for emergent search and rescue and collapse structure, as well as medical care.
Joe, just a thought since you mentioned the dogs. Is Kimberly likely to be deployed, or is it just a matter of seeing what happens first with the dogs?
She is not currently deployed, and there are not many canines in the field because this is mostly a water rescue scenario. So the dogs don't have a lot to add here, unfortunately. But she is not currently deployed, and she is not very happy about it.
Yeah, you get to go and I don't, what that's all about. I know how you two are.
Exactly.
But
exactly.
Things can certainly change. I know that time she got deployed before you, you were pretty jealous. So, but of course that didn't last long before you went off as well. Becky, any questions for Joe on what he's talking about?
I'm not sure if this is a question for Joe or kind of for the whole team, if anybody has any insight, but I'm curious how the evacuations are going in terms of sheltering, given that Houston was a hotspot. I haven't totally kept up with if it's still a hotspot for COVID. I was looking at the map from Cedar earlier today about shelters that were opening up, and so far it's just a handful in Louisiana. I don't know what it was updated, but if anybody has any insight on, you know, what's the number of shelters that are open? Are the people who are evacuating, is that number going to have adequate shelter? Like, where are all these people going? Like, what's the risk in terms of the pandemic being, the virus being spread?
So that's a great question, Becky. There's been a lot of talk about that. I don't, off the top of my head, have an answer specifically regarding number of shelters, et cetera. But I do know that there's been lots of work done to ensure that there is social distancing at those shelters, that there are reserved areas for folks who are COVID positive in an effort to separate them from those who are not. And lots of contingency plans being made on how to transport those folks as safely as we can without potentially exposing them to an infectious disease threat.
Joe, on a related note, do you think there's enough PPE to manage these shelters and so forth? Because that's going to be a lot of people coming together for potentially an extended amount of time.
Yeah, that's a great question, Sam. Again, I don't know specifically. I haven't had enough intel on that yet, as I just got into the theater to find out what's going on. I know it's been high on priority list for everybody. We have come fairly heavily prepared for PPE for our own folks in an effort to keep our people safe as well. And I feel confident that the locals have been preparing in the same way to ensure that there's plenty of PPE for everybody.
You know, one of the things I remember from other flood scenarios was the nastiness in the water, which is always a risk for your guys, right?
Um, That is correct. It is always a risk. In these flooded areas, you end up with a mix of all kinds of nasty stuff, from sewage to petroleum products and all kinds of stuff. So those floodwaters can be quite dangerous, and we try to carry PPE and decon equipment to be able to address those needs.
Well, just try to keep your guys out of pipes this time, will you? We don't need that kind of scare again. That was scary.
Absolutely.
Kyle, any further thoughts from you? We're winding down here. I'll let Joe go to work.
Well, Sam, to hit on the question you asked a little bit earlier about that excessive rainfall threat, as far as it pertains to the Ark-La-Tex region there, the Weather Prediction Center, which issues these excessive rainfall outlooks for the day on Thursday, they're actually they're forecasting, of course, the heaviest rainfall to occur ahead and just east of the center of the circulation once Laura does make landfall. And right now, the highest amounts look to occur across portions of central and southern Arkansas as that system briefly slows before makes that quick turn to the north and to the east. So right in that area, looking for locally up to 7 or more inches of rain for several areas, again, across the far eastern Texas, northwest Louisiana, and central and southern Arkansas regions.
Well, Becky, as you were alluding to earlier, what happened before in Houston is that Harvey just sat on top of them for days, where this one being more speedy, there won't be as much of a rain dump, even though there still may be storm surge, right?
Well, correct. And also depends on where the actual landfall occurs. So the landfall with Harvey was kind of near Corpus Christi, and that placed Houston in the northeast quadrant of the storm, which was significant for a couple of reasons. One, they were set up under a lot of heavy rain bands, but also under bands that were constantly spinning up tornadoes. So unless something drastically changes, Houston should not be in that same scenario. Regardless of storms, the storm's going to be moving quicker than Harvey was. So I was talking to my sister, who has a house west of Texas, but is currently living in the Netherlands. And I kind of told her, you know, winds of probably anywhere from 60 to 100, depending on where the actual landfall occurs, that the main threat's going to be storm surge, which is why there have been mandatory evacuations right along the coast. But people should certainly prepare for, several inches of rain, obviously some storm surge if you're on the immediate coast, and hopefully you have secured your property and evacuated. And wind gusts, as always with hurricanes, and of course a bit of an inland flooding threat, as Kyle just mentioned, there in the Mississippi Valley.
Well, on that note, Joe, if you have to be doing the moving around, you might potentially do, isn't that going to be an issue with all the water? How are you going to get there? By boat?
That's a great question. And I think it depends a little bit on us trying to be a bit ahead of that, as well as our need to tie in with task force resources, et cetera, that are able to get us where we need to be.
Kyle, one more question I kind of hate to ask, but is there anything else brewing out there in the tropics?
Not as of the last outlook that I saw, Sam. So right now, all eyes focused on Laura. But of course, as we've hinted at many times throughout this podcast and as podcast previously, when it comes to hurricane weather and things, there's so much more to the story than the category of the storm and where the center of that storm does track and make landfall. So keeping an eye on hurricanes.gov, so the official National Hurricane Center website, and then weather.gov for those hurricane local statements and how that is going to impact you or your team locally.
Yeah, we're just glad that Tropical Storm Kyle was a wash. He just kind of went away quickly. Becky, further thoughts? You're talking about preparedness, and we could do a whole show on that, as we have before. Final thoughts from you?
Just try not to get too focused on the category. And I'm just really going to echo what Kyle just said. It's so important to focus on the impacts, to understand what hazards might be impacting you, to know your risk level of those hazards and to act accordingly. As we've said in a lot of different podcasts, have a go bag of everything that you would want to take with you if you have to leave, you know, within an hour's notice. The same goes for the tropics and the wildfires that are currently happening. I've known a few people out west that have had to evacuate in very, very short notice. So just be prepared for the worst, which is not a great thing to say. But if you're prepared for the worst and it doesn't happen, then that's a good thing. And if it does occur, then you're ready to kind of bug out at a moment's notice and have all the materials and equipment that you need to stay safe and happy for, you know, a few days. Happy is the right word, but, you know, prepared.
Prepare is a better word, yes. And don't drive your car in water. Or Joe and his team will be out there trying to fish you out, and I think they have kind of other things to do. So there you go. Joe, final thoughts?
Well, hopefully I'll have an opportunity to talk two or three times during the week as this thing develops, and I'll look forward to keeping everybody posted, and everybody stay safe.
You too, certainly. So, Jamie, we're wrapping up another one.
Well, I just want to wrap it up another one, absolutely, and I just want to thank Joe for making time while he's driving and heading down the road and getting settled. Joe, real quick, where can folks check in with Paragon Medical Education Group if they want to find out a little bit more about what training you all have coming up once you're back in once you're back in Memphis? But your team's still doing stuff, I know.
Yeah, that we are, Jamie. And please reach out to us at ParagonMedicalGroup.com or on our Facebook page at Paragon Medical Group, or you can always reach us at the Disaster Podcast. We look forward to talking to you.
Excellent. And Becky, where can folks find you?
Definitely over on Twitter, WX_Bex, the Disaster Podcast Facebook group, and over on LinkedIn. I've been doing a little bit of more long-form writing on meteorology and emergency preparedness. The topic I wrote about today was exactly what we just talked about, which is not focusing too much on the category and focusing on hazards and impacts. So if you're on LinkedIn, check me out. It's Becky DePodwin.
Yeah, look forward to those.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Definitely. Tell people to do that, definitely. Kyle, you as well, where can folks track what you're following out there?
Absolutely, Jamie. Folks can find me on all the social media places under the handle WXKyleNelson. Feel free to follow along with me, connect with me on LinkedIn, and have a further conversation in the Disaster Podcast Facebook group.
And I really have to say, both Becky and Kyle really are a fountain of great information and resources that they tweet quite regularly. So, please go ahead and, follow them, keep an eye on what they're doing. And I'm going to put the link over in the Facebook group if folks want to check out Becky's articles over on LinkedIn. I think they sound pretty fascinating, and it'd be nice to be able to take a look at what she's got going on over there. Sam, where can folks find
every
you?
Every place you can find Kyle and Becky under Sam Bradley or Sam Bradley 11. I think there'll be some lively discussion in the community Facebook group, and they're always a wealth of information for us. What about you, Jamie?
Well, you can find me under the handle PodMedic in most social media locations, so please friend or follow me there. And, of course, in our Disaster Podcast Facebook group and over at DisasterPodcast.com. And don't forget, when you're over at DisasterPodcast.com, on every episode, there are links right below the audio player at the top of the page to subscribe to the show using your favorite mobile apps, so whether it's iOS or Android. You can even subscribe by email, so please do that, and that way you'll get every episode alerted to you so you can take a listen to it and catch up with what we're doing. Sam, I'm glad we got together with the team here. Hopefully we'll be able to connect with Joe once or twice at least over the next 5 days or so we can keep up to date with what's going on the ground, specifically with referral to our disaster responder groups here in our team. And I guess that's a wrap for this episode.
Yeah, and if Joe texts or emails anything and gets the opportunity, we'll put those up for you as well on the community site so you can tell what's going on with him. So, Jamie, this may sound kind of lame, but hurricane weather is not our everyday weather.